Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Tuesday, and it's the 16th of September, and I'm recording at 10:25 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, interesting day here. I know I say that, but my goodness, this really is interesting. Let's start with stock markets. First, the Asia-Pacific sector got clipped. Japan down for the first time in a few days, but only by a quarter of a point, and it really does look like it's in the process of completing its lengthy consolidation of last year's excellent gains when you look at the charts. Okay, the Hong Kong Hang Seng Index been down 7 days in a row. That's taken it back towards not quite the 24,000 level. It's 24,136, but the region of 24,000 is really where the upside breakout had occurred to indicate that we're going to have a bullish lengthy intermediate term outlook here. But China A shares had a downside key day reversal here, a fairly good sized one, hit a new high and then closed beneath the little trading range that's been forming over the last 5 or 6 days, down nearly 2% for the down 1.82% for the Shanghai Composite Index. Other mainland China indices are a little bit weaker than that. Taiwan down nearly a percentage point. They were pretty well all week. Exception was South Korea, which was up a third of a percentage point. And some big hits. India down 1.21% on the Sensex, and that's creating a few little very short term oversold conditions. If you look at the stochastics indicators in the chart library. Now, elsewhere. The European stock markets were mostly somewhat easier, on the order of a quarter of a point to just under half a percentage point. The exceptions that I can see on my immediate screen, which doesn't have all of those European indices, but it has a number of them, Sweden up a fraction and Switzerland also up a fraction. So generally the region was soft. Here in the Americas, much more positive here. The Dow closed up 100 points. That's up 0.59 of a percent. The S&P, for a change, the S&P and the NASDAQ. Remember, the NASDAQ was quite weak yesterday, that NASDAQ Composite Index. Well, it's up 3/4 of a percent today, as also is the is the S&P 500 index. Modest gains for Canada and Mexico. Brazil up over 2 percentage points. Silva looks to be increasing. Well, more people thinking that she can win this election that's about to come out. And on that election, governance is everything, as we like to say. And really, they would be swapping. They would be getting rid of a very, very left-wing prime minister. Okay, what about government bonds? Well, now, have a look at that chart of the Merrill Lynch that shows the 10-year total return index. It's one that Owen and I post quite frequently, and Owen has posted it again today. And it's really quite interesting because it has been running into a little bit of resistance up near the higher side of its range. I mean, really, people who are holding those bonds, though, have not felt any pain so far. But you know that that U.S. 10-year bond has seen its best rally in a number of months, and it's just below the 2.6 level percent level here today. And that's interesting because the Merrill Lynch total return using that 10-year bond has dipped down and is getting close to its rising 200-day moving average. And it also has a sequence of rising lows since the mid-2013, I think it's since the mid-2013 period. And a break in that sequence of rising lows would just make it look a little bit more toppy. And I think there's a decent chance that we could actually see that happening in here. Moreover, some people feel, and this is something that I've aired in these audios in the past, that the global bond market is something of a bubble. I say something of a bubble because you still have a lot of central banks that are in there and actually buying, continuing to buy as part of the QE program. And therefore, a lot of people are going to be a little bit complacent about the bond market on the basis of don't fight the Fed or any other central bank that's actually buying its country's bonds. But come on, you've got yields that are at their lowest levels in a century for some of these markets or close close to it. And unless they all turn into Japan of 10, 15 years ago, we're not going to see that type of strong deflationary environment going forward. So I think that really bond yields are in a, these long-dated government bond yields in Europe, where they pushed down very sharply in the last couple of months. It looks climactic. And again, this U.S. rally is interesting. It's not something that's raising a lot of eyebrows right now in terms of implications for stock markets and equity investors, or it's not something that's going to worry the Fed here just yet, but it may start to worry bond investors who are in that market because they're still enjoying the achievement of just a 30-year plus excellent bull market. And well, that's changing. That's what the evidence is really suggesting. Okay, what else is important in here that we can comment on? Metals, copper had a big upside dynamic in here today. Well, that's the first time we've seen that for a while. And also, all of the industrial metals were higher today. And yes, all of the precious metals were also higher in here today. And you've got to have a bit of a memory to remember when that last occurred. Certainly not in the last few months. So what caused that sharp jump in copper? May have had some short positions in that market, but I think it's partly related to China. And China, there is some evidence that China is now beginning to stimulate its economy. And copper is the metal that is most sensitive to improvements in the Chinese economy, because China is dependent on exports for, I think, for over half of the copper that it actually imports. China depends on imports for over half of the copper that it actually uses. I think that's the ballpark figure there. So what else happened here today? Well, the dollar index, which has been on a roll recently, but it's a little easier in here today. And sterling is a little bit firmer. It was when I last looked. Well, it's not. It's unchanged here on the day. But it's at 1.6272. There's been a lot of concern about sterling. You remember it was up at 171 not all that long ago, too high as far as the Bank of England was actually concerned, and as far as British exporters were concerned. But there's been a lot of talk that sterling could go into some temporary free fall if the yes vote on the Scottish referendum to pull out of the United Kingdom and go independent, if that vote won. And that's taking place. That vote is on Thursday, as I mentioned in yesterday's audio. I'm sure you're well aware of it. And that's going to be a big deal. And that's also when the Alibaba float actually takes place. So that will certainly be interesting. But let's deal with Scotland here first. Because one of the things that's quite interesting that I saw here today is that a firm called Betfair, it's one of the big betting concerns here in the UK, is that they're actually starting to pay out bets on this referendum to the no vote. In other words, saying that Alex Salmond's side is going to lose. Now, that's just they've qualified it here because this could remind a few people of counting your chickens before they hatch here, but I'm just reading from Bloomberg is saying Betfair's payout applies to its sports book operation, not the online exchange in which punters bet against each other. But nevertheless, that shows some real confidence here, and I think the odds are about 78-79%, according to the betting shops, in favor of the no vote winning, which would keep Scotland in the United Kingdom. Now, this has been kind of tenterhooks in the last few days, and I don't think it's just whipped up by the press here, because the polls did narrow really very, very sharply, and we did even have a couple of polls which said that the yes vote to pull out of the United Kingdom was actually in the lead. And a lot of other people, the majority of commentators, have been saying it's all too close to call. I think the best thing that could possibly happen in Scotland's interest, in my opinion, and certainly in the interests of the United Kingdom and also for the European Union. And I think also the United States would be very happy to see this, is for Alex Salmond to lose that vote quite significantly, because there's going to be a lot of ill will after this, and that's not constructive, obviously. So we don't need that. Whereas if it's a knife-edge election result, well, the situation would just be that much, much worse, and we don't need that. But I think if we get a victory here, that would firm up the UK stock market, and that could well spread to a few other markets here. Conversely, if the Alex Salmond's side wins and Scotland is withdrawing from the United Kingdom, I think you'd see a lot of pain, certainly in the UK stock market. Okay. All right. What else to mention here? The Alibaba situation. Now, this is going to be an awfully big IPO, as you know, and possibly the biggest of all. Depends on last-minute decisions and negotiations here that are actually taking place. But it's chunky, and it might be right up there around 22 billion. So where's that money coming from? Well, I think a lot of it will come from becoming from shares that are actually being sold. And that's why yesterday I post that Russell 2000 index, and I'm posting it again in here today. Keep your eye on that overall. Now, the Alibaba IPO is being described as oversubscribed, which means that people would not, the big institutional players who will be in there picking it up, will not get as much as they might wish to have. And so they may drive it up after the float. Now, if that occurs, then of course Alibaba is sucking in even more money on this move, and this would also encourage more supply. To step forward in the pipeline. In other words, other companies that want to float their shares. And I am concerned about this. I don't think it's an immediate problem, but I think it's a medium-term problem, quite potentially for Wall Street. We'll keep an eye on that, and it would affect other markets somewhat more. Okay, anything else to mention? No, I think I've covered well the soft commodities. Again, there's mostly lower soybeans and wheat are both down here today. Corn barely changed. Soybeans down particularly. It's just good crops. And not too many people complaining about that, except perhaps some of the farmers. But the main factor is that we had several years, as you know, almost like the biblical seven of poor crops cycles and limited reserves, limited st holdover stockpiles. But this is helping to increase supplies globally. That's a very good thing. And on that note, all the very best to all of you.